and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. We are proud to announce that LQ ISO has now facilitated over 1 million Linux downloads. Founded about a year ago in August of 2004, LQ ISO allows users to find and rate fast local download mirrors. The site currently allows you to download almost 120 different Linux distributions from well over 430 different mirrors. The site also recently started using GeoIP data, which will help you find the fastest local download mirror. Visit iso.linuxquestions.org to download your favorite Linux distributions. And if you don't see your favorite distro listed, make sure to click the Suggest Additions link and let us know. We should be able to add it pretty quick now that we have three or four people regularly checking the queue for that. Help us spread the word about LQISO. If you know anyone looking to download Linux, let them know about the site. The LQ Wiki now allows you to use either the Creative Commons by SA license, which is a license that's always been used at the site, or the GFDL, which is the GNU Free Document license. All articles in the main namespace are still going to be licensed under the CC by SA license. All GFDL content will go into a new GFDL namespace. And this should allow us to add quite a bit of content that was out there under the GFDL already, while still allowing the main focus of the site to remain the CC by SA license. In addition to this, the Drive to 3000 LQ Wiki articles continues. We're now well over 2,500 articles. So visit wiki.linuxquestions.org to help us build the largest general Linux knowledge base on the web. If you'd like to contribute but aren't really sure what to write about, click the Wanted Pages link for a list of pages that people would like to see written. Next LQ story. We recently interviewed Doc Searles for LQ Radio. In the interview, we discuss a variety of topics, including recent OSCON and Linux World trips, the Clutrain Manifesto, a couple different things about Google, Splogs, RSS, Linux trademarks, and more. If you haven't heard that interview, make sure that you are subscribed to the combined feed, which will make sure that you get both the LQ Radio interviews, the LQ Radio shows, and the LinuxQuestions.org podcast that you're listening to now. Next up, we've taken a couple steps to improve the speed of the search at LinuxQuestions.org until a more permanent solution can be implemented. I know the speed and quality of the search is one of the most common suggestions that we get on the site. And we recently, about 2 or 3 days ago, did have the main search server completely died finally. It was kind of on its last leg for a while, but it's finally completely dead. So we're offloading the search to a different server now, and we've tweaked a couple things. So the quality of the search is not improved yet. We are rewriting that, and the new search will be part of the redesign that we're doing that should hopefully be ready in a couple months. But the search should at least be faster now. It's offloaded to a little bit better server. So if you have any feedback on that, as always, we'd like to hear it and post that in the website suggestions forum and on the site. Last up, LQ is going to London. This is just a quick note to let everyone know that we will be exhibiting at the Linux World Expo UK, which is in London. So far, it looks like in addition to myself, and I am finally confirmed for the trip, we'll have at least Chris, David, and Ray. We might end up getting a couple more people, but those are so far the mods that are definite. Last year's trip to London was an excellent time. The show was good, and it was great to get out there. It was my first time being in London, and I really like the city, and I'm really looking forward to getting back there. So thanks to the LWE UK guys for inviting us back to, they call it the .org village as opposed to the .org pavilion, but it's the identical idea. So we look forward to seeing you there if you're able to make it. Now onto the news. The first story I have, MySQL, say it ain't SCO. To admit, I was a bit surprised to hear that the MySQL AB signed a deal, any deal really, with SCO. Surely it wasn't true, it was my first thought. And if it was true, it was probably something along the lines of SCO buying a support contract and then touting it as a partnership just to get PR. Which would seem like an odd thing to do until you consider some of SCO's recent PR moves. And then I saw the press release on the MySQL AB site. they must not be real proud of this release, because at least when I went there, and this is a couple days ago now, this story is a few days old, the press release was not listed on the press release index page, even though it had been dated a couple, like a day earlier than the date that I went there. So it's not listed in the index, but if you search for it, you can find it. Now, I understand that they are a business that needs to make money, but I cannot imagine that the negative impact or negative will generated by this deal will not far outweigh any short-term monetary gain. Now, while SCO does indeed still have some entrenched, very small install niches left, it's clearly and demonstrably a dying product. And a quick look at SCO's numbers easily confirm this. And as a company that depends on open source to survive, which is MySQL-EB, partnering with a company that declared the GPL to be unconstitutional seems like an odd move. And here was a comment, let me find it, and this was from an employee of MySQL-EB, but he did make it clear that this was his opinion and not any kind of official opinion. And here's his quote. First, our users are our users, no matter what platform they are. This isn't about SCO. This is about the users of that platform who deserve to be able to get support. There are still a lot of SCO servers sitting out there, and the users deserve to be treated like any other users. They didn't pick SCO's battle, and many of them have legacy applications that cannot easily be ported or easily rewritten. The choice of a vendor is not always an option. And that's the end quote. While I'm glad to see that they are at least trying to have their customers' needs in mind, I don't think partnering with SCO is in anybody's best interest at all. And I can see an argument to be made for them to resume shipping binaries for the SCO platform, which they did stop doing recently. And certainly, if you want to purchase support and are on the SCO platform, I see no reason for them to turn your business away. But to go ahead and actually partner with SCO, I think that's a completely different thing. And I want to say this happened on the September 4th. I thought we might see some additional releases from MySQL-EB, either a clarification or you know, some kind of reasoning. And at least I have not seen that yet. So we'll have to see how this one plays out. But in the long run, I cannot imagine that it'll be good for MySQL-EB. And if anyone does see any official comments aside from that press release, definitely do let me know. Either email me or send me an audio comment or let me know somehow. The next story I have is Vista is a hardware beast. I did chuckle a bit when I saw the hardware requirements for the upcoming Windows Vista, aka Longhorn. The only prerequisite that seems in any way reasonable to me is the 1 gig of RAM for all 32-bit machines. And the 2 gig of RAM for 64-bit machines, you know, if you're going to go out and get a 64-bit machine, 2 gigs is probably not too much to ask. But let's take a quick look at the other prerequisites. Now, while 256 megs of RAM in a video card is not outrageous these days, and some even have a gig already, but 1 gig video cards definitely are not cheap, 256 megs seems like an awfully high bar for a minimum. And the reason they claim this is that due to a change from using the CPU, the system CPU, to display bitmaps on the screen, to using the video card's GPU to render vectors on the screen. So this requirement alone is going to make a whole lot of computers fall short of the minimum. And they'd also like to see your video card be a PCI Express card and not the much more common AGP card, so that should narrow it down even further. Next up is the RAM, and like I said, while 1 gig is not outrageous, they'd like to see it be DDR3 RAM, which I don't even think is shipping yet, and if it is shipping, according to the roadmap, it doesn't look like it's targeted for mass adoption until at least 2007, so where they got that prerequisite from, I'm not sure, but since I don't know of any shipping machines right now with DDR3, that's a bad sign there. And the next minimum requirement that they'd like to see is that you have a SATA 2 drive. And while SATA 2 is nice because it does include native command queuing, which was historically one of the reasons that SCSI drives were so much better, it's certainly not a standard in one of today's machines. So between SATA 2, DDR3, and the 256 megs of video card RAM, we've probably eliminated almost every one machine. You know, if you're listening right now and you do have a machine that fits all those specs, you know, I'd like to hear from you just to know what you do have. But now here's the kicker. No current TFT monitors out there is going to support high-definition playback in Vista. Not a singular one that's currently manufactured. To play HD DVD or Blu-ray content or anything like that, you're going to need a HDCP-compatible monitor. And I have seen some bunch of TVs hit the market recently, but monitors definitely still are not going to be something that's common. So the bottom line here, if you'd like to upgrade to Vista, you'll almost definitely need to buy a whole new machine, including a new monitor. Kind of almost seems like Microsoft is forcing you into buying a new computer. And this may be their payback to the Dells and the HPs of the world for all the abuse that they've been given in the past. It seems coincidental at a minimum. But this, I think, has to be good news for Linux, which will definitely not have any of these lofty prereqs. So hopefully the Linux vendors will be able to take advantage of this. And my last story of the day, eBay to buy Skype in a $2.6 billion deal. Sure does look like some of that dot-com madness is back, doesn't it? $2.6 billion and a full half of that is in cash. And actually, in reading some other blogs, it seems like there's a potential for an additional like $1.5 billion depending on some performance objectives. I haven't seen any hard details of that. So that would put the total up to, what, $4.1 billion. The BBC on this one seems to speculate that this might have to do with eBay letting its buyers and sellers talk to each other via their computers. But I can't say that I think that that's hopefully at least not the main reason that they're trying to do this. Now, who wants to sit around and answer questions real time for something like eBay? Just between the language barriers and the time zone differences and myriad reasons, really, that just doesn't seem like a very viable option. Email just seems like a far better solution for answering auction questions. It does seem to me that eBay is trying to move itself from being a quote-unquote auction company to more of a business solution provider company. And they may even be trying to tie Skype more with PayPal than eBay, allowing you to charge for an incoming Skype call by the minute, as an example, which you could think of it as a competitor almost to 900 numbers. And they could even use it as an inexpensive way to offer incoming 1-800 numbers, for businesses. So that right there is an interesting idea and does have some potential. But Skype, between the fact that, A, Skype has some very odd peculiarities in many different ways, and the fact that it's not based on SIP, and while historically it not being based on SIP really hasn't mattered, they've been adding, they claim, like 150,000 users a day, with something like 53 million users already. As SIP takes off, this is definitely going to matter. And you combine that with the fact that Google's now in the VoIP or PC to landline market. Microsoft's in there with the recent acquisition. Yahoo's in there. Gizmo, which is led by Michael Robertson, is in there. With all those companies, and those are big companies when you think Yahoo, Microsoft, Google, all those companies jumping into the fray, this is not a market I'd be wanting to get into right now. And $2.6 billion just seems like a lot of money, and especially half of that cash to be dishing out for this. So is this a snap reaction to all the recent Google Pay rumors, which is a rumored competitor to PayPal? Or does eBay really have a plan here that just most of us are missing, or at least most of us are undervaluing if they see this kind of value to it? So kind of like the first story, this is something I think we're going to have to see how it plays out. But it's definitely going to be tough, I think, for them to get any kind of ROI on that kind of cash in this deal. But it should at least be interesting to see them try. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.